The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Mr. May, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. I don't know whether you've been tuned in to Timwold on AM 1368 and the AM service on the DAB, but if you have anything to anything you spotted this morning, then by all means get in touch. Got quite a few emails and texts I didn't get to yesterday, but so we'll look at those again. And also, doing business on the Isle of Man, how easy is it to open a bank account? And if you're involved in that business, I'd just be interested to know what you think. Because I think the Chamber of Commerce has seen the government again, but they didn't like the budget. And there seems to be a feeling, I don't know whether this is just hearsay or skeet or whether it is genuine, that the attitude towards business seems to be just slipping away. And is the Isle of Man pro-business? Questions have been raised about the decision to go ahead with a Milanan sailing from Liverpool yesterday. A passenger on the sailing, which arrived about 2:30 yesterday afternoon, told us their car was one of about 20 that were damaged during the journey. Describing the crossing, they said they had to hold on to their seat and stay in it, and that the galley was completely trashed. They also say it was announced over the public address system they were experiencing gale force 8 winds. Now, speaking to Manx Radio afterwards, they claimed that foot passengers were able to disembark almost immediately. Car passengers were kept on board for more than two hours after they docked. They also claimed they weren't allowed to go to the car decks to assess any damage for over an hour. Now, this passenger's car suffered a broken wing mirror, dented wheel arch, but they say that others suffered more significant damage after being shunted into each other. We've seen some of the pictures. People have sent us pictures in. The passenger says they've queried with the steam packet why cars were squeezed into a small area on the upper level where they could bash into each other instead of spreading them along the empty main hold, as there hadn't been many cars on the crossing. They say that after this experience, they're going to make their own decision about whether or not they get the boat in bad weather in the future and not to rely on the steam packet. Steam packet has told us it will respond to these claims at some point today. We put these to the steam packet yesterday afternoon and didn't receive a reply, but as they say, they'll put something together and respond to the claims later on today. Were you on that boat, the sailing from Liverpool yesterday? It was tramping across the seas yesterday. We were looking at it from Douglas Head. Any thoughts on that matter? It's always been sometimes a badge of honour that you've been on a bad sailing. Everybody's got a story about a bad sailing, but really, that's the fast craft. It's not, you know, it's not a boat. It's the fast craft. Handles waves in a slightly different way. Anyway, thoughts, text, email, call and WhatsApp. Also, the story about the T-junction closing as well. We talked about that yesterday and quite a few people had something to say about it. And again, this was it yesterday. And also the talk yesterday about Theresa Cope receiving abuse on social media. And again, Paul, I think I mentioned this at the end, but didn't get to all of it. Paul just said, Theresa Cope is one of the only speakers working in government capable of stringing a sentence together. I love her and think she should run the country. She's objective, courteous and well-informed, says Paul. This story about nuisance now has come to an end. One way or the other, it had to come, and Newsons are giving up after a 5-year fight with the planners. The owners of the former Newsons building say they're giving up. They're selling the property. So if you want to buy Newsons, you can't do much with it, but neither could they. The company wanted to convert the site into housing and retail units, but the plans were rejected for not providing sufficient justification for its total loss. So they spent a fortune with advocates and with planners and architects over the past few years. No doubt there's been a lot of government time taken up on it, and now nothing is happening. It's standing there like a forlorn broken tooth on North Quay, surrounded by corrugated iron, shorn up by steelwork, because apparently the thing would fall down. So what do we do? Who's going to take it on now? Who's going to find? They were going to spend, I think it was upwards of nearer £8 million they wanted to spend on it, using Manx contractors, Manx builders, putting it together and obviously providing some jobs. There was going to be some residential stuff going on there. But I thought that's what the government wanted, going back to Alan Bell, who said they wanted to make the harbour in Douglas, the inner harbour, almost like a Mediterranean scene, where there will be houses and hotels and shops and restaurants and cafes all around the inner harbour. At the moment, it seems to have stalled after a few cafes and a few restaurants, some of which come and go. Barbary Coast has been very successful. On South Quay, not much. So who's going to take this forward, I wonder? Who's going to do something with it? The government's economic strategy is to collect more and more money from more and more people. It's a bit of an I'm all right, Jack attitude of government, while people and businesses are going under, says this correspondent. I'm going to buy Newsons, says Desmond. I'm going to put wind turbines on the site. Get some planning for that straight away. Says, I don't think you would, Des, but it's an idea. As I listened to Key's Question Time this morning, and I've never heard such negative answers to Mr. Thomas's questions over the steam packet in my life about the new Liverpool dock. When will it open? Sometime perhaps, and very doubtful from Mr. Crookall and Dr. Allenson, says Terry. Well, that's the story. They don't know. When is the Liverpool landing stage? You know, this thing that we built, paid for, through the nose, £70 million. The Treasury Minister has confirmed today work still needs to be carried out. It remains unknown. Those are the words. Unknown when the first passengers sailing to the new Liverpool ferry terminal will take place. Treasury has ruled out setting a date following modifications to Mananan to allow passengers to board at low tide. Douglas Central MHK Chris Thomas pushed for a timeline confirming when residents can expect to be using the £70 million site. And this is what Dr. Allenson had to say.
It is absolutely essential for the safety of passengers, the crew and the vessel that these berthing trials take place during different tides and different weather conditions, so that the captain is familiar with approaching the new ferry terminal in a safe, prompt and quick manner.
And nobody thought of that before, apparently. So at the moment, we don't know. Faster by Mike at the Welbeck. Hello, Michael. I thought the plans for Newsons looked superb. Such a shame Lower Douglas is our gateway. It's going to continue to look like a Ukrainian town after a visit from Mr. Putin, says Mike. You may be entirely pro what's happened with the planning committee. Newsons was a big heritage site. I mean, a real heritage site. And a lot of sites like that had gone. Do you remember the old Riley's on the corner? That's been turned into apartments. But that was an old warehouse. But that went. So it dates back to the 1700s, thought to be one of the last remaining buildings of the era on North Quay. But they're going. They're packing up shop. They've taken the sting, really, from employing professionals over the past few years. But the company behind it are saying, enough's enough, and they're off. And Dave's on now. Hello, David.
Hi, Andy. Just regarding Newsoms itself, it's very sad, really, that we have a developer who lives in the Isle of Man, who wants to invest in the Isle of Man, and we can't get anywhere with anybody to get a practical solution on it. Like you said earlier, I was involved in the one with Riley's when Martin Riley was moving away from the quay there. And I remember going to visit it, and it was an old warehouse at one time. But look at it now. it fits in with the scape of the harbour. And then further down, as you get towards where the old Newsom's used to be, I remember all the time looking up through the where the garage was there, straight up to the roof through the beams and up to the sky. And I worry now about this the overspend on the nurse's home, the old nurse's home site. Who's accountable to that? Who's signed? I keep saying to him, it's the variations on the contracts. Who signed the contract for the variation to alter planning? Who endorsed it? Was there any finance behind that? And then we flipped down to the promenade near the Summer Hill there at the bottom. We've got the stables, which was supposed to be from government there, past its best. And then they had an inspection done on it, and here we go. It's it can be saved. But what's happening? And who's paying for all that scaffolding outside it?
Well, somebody is. We're obviously paying for it, but there just seems to be mixed messages, David, really. When just down from Newsom's, not 50, 100 yards, you've got the old bus station, which nobody can seem to make their mind up what they want to do with it, but you get the feeling that the money's not there, because if the money were there, something would have been done. Yeah. So you have somebody ready there with a wallet open, with £6 to 8 million ready to do Newsom's, and the planning committee say no, go away.
Yeah. Well, it was done by an independent person. It went to a planning inspector. The decision was made. I feel sorry for the company itself. I've no connection with them at all. Before anybody comes on and says anything, but you look across the harbour now. Where the pub used to be.
Oh, the Trafalgar.
The Trafalgar there. We've got more holes than somewhere in a war-torn country.
It's weird. If you look down from the Trafalgar, the bottom of Douglas Head Road, from the Trafalgar down to the old steam bridge, by the swing bridge there, there's a fat lot of nothing there apart from temporary car parks.
Well, yes, and the other thing too is the hole's getting full of water. There was some steel place there some time ago, but we have the issue there where even the prison site, we'd have to go through them, the old school, Park Road and so forth, government sites which nothing's happening on.
Oh. Well, we'll wait and see.
Well, I would wonder, we still haven't been able to get on this housing board, have we, to say to them, you know, what is the plan they're going to do for us as the taxpayer and the government to invest money in the Isle of Man?
And as you say, if there's a pot of Section 13 money sitting there...
Yeah. Well, nobody's been on to say to me, I have inquired, although planning, believe it or not, planning's been down for a few days where you couldn't even look at planning applications there. I believe it may be back up now. But all these things should be out in the open, flushed out, and say, how do we help these developers, and how do we... These people that come to the Isle of Man live here, bring their families here, and they want to enjoy life in the Isle of Man and be part of it.
OK. All right. Thanks, David.
Bye.
Good to hear from you. We're on through till one today. We're open line, so whatever's on your mind, could be what we're talking about or anything else. It could be starting a business on the Isle of Man. Now, there's anecdotal evidence that it's taking a long time to open a bank account on the Isle of Man. So I don't know, perhaps you're in the business of facilitating business on the Isle of Man, whether you're in CSP, corporate service provision. But getting business to the Isle of Man is what we're all about. Because, bluntly, we need the money. We need the throughput. We need the tax revenues. So if CSPs are having difficulty opening bank accounts for businesses that want to come here, people want to put their money here, then what does it say about this? If you've got any thoughts on that, and also the closure of the T-Junction, which are giving up their lease while not signing a new lease next year when it happens. And also, I got a message in from Anne-Marie who said, do we actually have a method for getting blue plaques on the Isle of Man? You know, those commemorative things. I know we've had some I don't know whether the Bee Gees ones are official, the Bee Gees ones around Douglas and Union Mills, but is there an official way that you get a blue plaque or the Manx version of it somewhere on the Isle of Man? Anyway, any thoughts? Oh, Juan's with us now. Hi, Juan.
Hey, Andy. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks. Yeah, good.
Good, good, good. Yeah, weird weather formation started in the Antarctica, crept its way right the way down the coast of Africa, which is causing big waves and high winds. And the whole of the Western Cape got hit with seriously high winds the other week, which they're not really used to. So yeah, and it's hitting down in Europe and into England as we speak, I think. So that's probably causing some of the conditions. But weird where it's come from. It's just formulated in the Antarctic. So yeah, I was with some friends last night at a dinner function, and a friend's friend phoned up from Michigan, and strange story, but he's just had to cull 8 million birds through avian flu. It's, his whole business is pretty much devastated.
8 million? And, what does he do?
8 million. He's the biggest producer of liquid egg, and is one of his biggest sales is for McDonald's. So his whole business, which is predominantly based in Michigan, and it's a mom and pop business, so it's being handed down. But you know, to have that news come from government that you've got to call your whole business is devastating. Yeah, isn't it amazing how someone's life can change in 24 hours, eh?
Oh crikey, it can change in 24 minutes, Juan.
Absolutely, yeah, especially with a bit of government intervention as well. And just going on to all things Manx, the Newsome site, and you might know more than me, Andy, I don't know. I believe that Kell Properties, the order, or the preservation order, wasn't on that property when they bought it.
I don't think it was. No, I don't think. I think it was retrospective.
Yeah, and that's a little bit weird, isn't it? I mean, is that encouraging people to do business here when you honestly purchase a property with the intent of doing it up, and then a legislation is imposed on you afterwards? I think that really needs addressing. It doesn't send out a good message to any other people who are wanting to invest in older properties here.
Well, it doesn't sound like a strictly level playing field, does it?
It doesn't indeed, no. I seen some threads last week come up on the internet, and I've got to say, I think I'm right in this. Michael Joseph is not... or doesn't own that property and part of Kell Properties. I think I'm right in saying that, Andy. I think there was just a thread came up on there that they were pointing the finger at Michael Joseph about it.
No, I think I think he may be one of the spokespeople for Kell Properties, but I don't think, though he is, I don't think he owns it.
No, that's right, yeah, and it's just something that was going around the internet, but yeah, I just wanted to put that point over, you know, that this legislation was, or this act was put in on Kell after it was bought, so that's not really showing goodwill to people who are investing in the island. I'm just interested in what Peter Kelly's now proposing to do with an old building that's been held up.
Well, I mean, something's got to happen with it, because at some point the darn thing's going to fall down. It may be propped up at the moment. And it's not just that, but I mean, Juan, it's an eyesore. That back lane, you know, that goes by the saddle, isn't it? There, you know, yeah. I mean, that back lane is now blocked off. It's covered in moss. There's a little car park there and what have you. But I mean, can you imagine everybody who's coming over for the TT having a wander down North Quay, and there you are. The site that's been there for years and years and years, a heritage site that's rotting, and we're doing nothing about it.
And I mean, if you're going to impose this legislation, and you know, keeping Manx buildings and stuff is good and it's important, but there's a stage when a building comes to that nothing can be done with it. I mean, if it was going to be that important, it should have been put into a heritage scheme or foundation and preserved, and you know, charge admission to go and look around it. But who's going to go and look around an empty building? There's nothing inside of any value. The only thing you could do was put up timeline boards inside and make it into an historical building, but no one's going to do that unless they're a very wealthy person and got that money to waste. So it's a difficult one.
Well, I'm all for heritage. I love the idea of heritage, and the Isle of Man's got some great heritage. And there is a kind of a loose parallel in, you know, the Gaiety Theatre was saved one weekend by Mervyn Russell Stokes. You know, they were about to knock the Gaiety Theatre down, and they got in and saved the Gaiety Theatre over a weekend. Now, a fine building, though it may be in its prime, the nuisance building isn't the Gaiety Theatre, and the Gaiety Theatre is now used. So somebody's now got to come up with a bright idea as to why nuisance has been preserved.
Absolutely, totally, yeah, and you're quite correct. If it wasn't for Mervyn, and now the people, you know, that the trustees there that spend their time looking after it, the Gaiety would have been no more. And what a beautiful exhibition of old architecture from Matcham's there.
Yeah, but at the time, Juan, people thought it was a wreck and should come down. There was quite a body of opinion that just thought, look, it's had its time, knock it down.
Absolutely, and as I was saying last week about Manx culture, you know, that the appetite to keep it sometimes, and it works out good for us sometimes if we can get them people involved to fund it, and the appetite from people to keep it going. And just listening on a little note before I go on, I believe Jane Poole Wilson is virtuing the credibility of digital IDs as we speak in Tymbald.
Yes.
So that will be interesting to see where that goes, because without digital IDs, they're not going to get digital currency in place, and without that, they're not going to be able to control us. I'll leave it at that for today, Andy.
Thank you, June. Oh, my word. And Tom, thank you, Tom, for your WhatsApp. I started a new limited company in the hospitality business nearly 2 years ago. It took nearly 10 months to open a bank account. I was an existing customer with the same bank. They knew me, and the amount of paperwork they needed to prove who I was. Even though I banked with them, it caused a lot of stress and problems while trying to continue trading. Now, somebody somewhere is going to tell me why we need to do this. I'll be honest with you. The same thing. I got a letter from my bank, and told me that I had to fill in and prove who I was and prove, did I have any partners anywhere across the world? And who are they? What's their inside leg measurement? How much did they make last month? Now, I understand, everybody understands that anti-money laundering regulations have to be in place. But this is stopping business. As Tom said, 10 months to it. And not only that, you feel a fool when going into the bank. They feel like fools when telling you that you have to prove who you are, even though you've been doing business with them for 25 years. They look at you gone out and obviously say, well, it's company policy. This is what the bank needs to do. And then you say, but yes, come on, this is the Isle of Man. We all know each other. Everybody knows who everybody is on the Isle of Man. And as Tom said, bank with them for years and years and years, and they still want the paperwork done, filled out. Now, just two things. The nuisance site, what does it say to business? What does it say to people who are coming here with open wallets, wanting to spend? The nuisance site would have been a building site for the next year, 18 months, guarantee, wouldn't have taken as long to build as the nurse's home. It would have been up, and there would have been £6 to £8 million injected into the Manx economy. But no, not now. And as Tom said, 10 months to open a bank account, even though they know you and you bank with them. What are we saying to people? Here's Julian now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. How you doing?
Very well, thanks. Yeah, good.
Yeah, I'd just like to put an extra comment on from what Julian mentioned. I was listening to that exchange with Jane Poole Wilson. It there are certain other questions that perhaps need to be asked as well when you go a bit deeper into, you know, starting off with, because this is going to be for alcohol sales to start with. 80% of the data breaches are going through cloud servers like Amazon, Google, and Microsoft, and various others. Am I to understand that the machines that the vendors on the island are going to be connected to are going to have the data go through any of these cloud servers? And also, it's not just them. There's something called side door attacks, which is basically supply chain. So there will be other vendors down the chain that are accessing the data or putting the data in. So, you know, you might have eventually the passport office and the driving license or something. So all of those entities, they're all going to have their own different cybersecurity bits on. How do we know that they're all up to date with their latest antivirus or whatever? You know, there's, it's not just the one hole you've got to plug. You know, it's not as secure as the passport office posting you a passport and you've got it in your pocket. You know, your data will be all over the place. You know, it's a bit like air molecules all over the place. You just don't know where they'll be. I noticed that since COVID, since before the pandemic, since people have been working from home especially, cybercrime is through the roof. People are saying, I think they interviewed, they said over 70% of adults are worried about digital ID theft, also worried about their digital privacy. And I'll tell you another aspect of this, and I suspect that possibly nobles are already having this problem. In the US, healthcare is going over $125 billion spent on cybersecurity. Well, $125 billion, you'd think that you would want to be spending that on the healthcare and not plugging up your digital remote access, wouldn't you?
Would you trust the Manx government to be in charge of security, confidentiality, where digital ID is concerned?
Well, I mean, if you remember, back in 2021, Brazil, they did a digital vaccination passport that got hacked within 24 hours, and 231 million people's worth of their appointment data, their home address, their health history, whether they had what diseases they've been treated for, the whole thing got out within 24 hours. So it just makes you wonder. Sometimes, you know, the old ways of doing things, like having a physical passport on you, or, you know, even 20 quid in your pocket, you know, there's an awful lot of people that you just press a button and you can hack. I mean, what were they saying? Banks, hospitals, pipelines, meatpacking plants, water supplies, power stations have seen a 400% increase in cyber attacks on their databases to try and either mess them up or get the information. So in this rush to digitize everything, I think perhaps we need to just hit the brakes a second and think, you know, not only is this almost an impossible task to stem the flow of the dam, but it's hideously expensive. $125 billion just on cybersecurity for healthcare. I mean, I wonder what nobles are spending now on their computer antiviruses and things and all that.
Well, it will be. It's interesting to know. But I mean, if we're going to head into the cyber world, if we're heading into cyberspace, which it seems that we are, at some point we're going to have to jump, aren't we, and accept the consequences, or we just say, no, we're never going to do it.
Well, I heard some anecdotal evidence that there are some people who have been or on the island, but they've been across to the UK. There's three outlets for a Swedish firm where they are having a metal cylindrical implant pushed in, you know, surgically implanted with a crimping device between your thumb and your index finger into the hand.
Right.
And apparently they've been seen in various shops on the island where they just place their hand on the touch to pay and it's going through. Well, there's all kinds of consequences to doing that as well, I would imagine. Especially if somebody else has remote control of your database.
Good grief.
It's not like you can change your card easily, is it?
Good Lord. Okay, bring back checkbooks. That's what I say, Julian.
I agree.
Thanks for calling today.
Thanks, Andy.
Good to hear from you.
Sir.
Thank you. Ralph on 505. Isn't it beyond belief and frankly a damning indictment of our planning department that once again they'd rather have a building rot to the point of demolition than assist inward investment? I just can't believe it. I really can't. I'm lost for words. Well, open mouth, bemused, not surprised. The planning department, I think, are ruining the Isle of Man. So I think Mr. Cannon should get control of this, says Ralph. We're not against, can I just say, we're not against heritage. Heritage is brilliant. We've got some fantastic heritage on the Isle of Man. But do we have to save absolutely everything? And if nuisance is worth saving, where's the plan? The people who want nuisance saved, well, we know what they're against, or were against, because they won now. They were against development of nuisance. But what are they actually for? It would be nice to know. I'm delighted Kelman are giving up and selling nuisance. Developers are known to let buildings fall apart on purpose, then say it's in a dangerous condition. Saying they won't invest in the Isle of Man, I think, sounds childish. I thought that new development was ugly, says 068. Nuisance is an historical building, should be listed. We've lost so many of our historic buildings. That's 068. Thanks also to, I expect nuisance will be purchased by somebody else, says Manx Will. Who's going to buy it? Hottest tips. Another 15-minute city, perhaps? Is this going to be purchased by the Isle of Man government? Will they get, can you imagine? Is this what will happen then? That the Isle of Man, the development corporation, may buy nuisance and do something with it. But they can't, because it's protect. Anyway, maybe they've got an answer. John says, if the building is of merit like Castle Mona, yes. But these buildings like nuisance are built of rubble. They have no foundations, and the construction is extremely poor quality. Well, it's lasted this long, albeit in a poor state. Replace them. And I thought Alan Bell was absolutely correct. We need a showcase for the visitors. We need to make the inner harbour, the yacht basin in Douglas, absolutely shine. It must be a showcase for the Isle of Man. It's where people walk from the sea terminal through to the steam railway. Took me 6 months to open a business account in the Isle of Man, says Bob on 679. The bank account service, says Woody, is rubbish. I'm still waiting 4 weeks for my three accounts to be set up, plus small Manx businesses going through the system. The government is so unreal, out of touch with families. For I want to build the biggest tank in the British Isles, says that, to be Manx and proud again for our children. I probably won't be here, says Woody. So are you having problems setting up a business bank account? If you're trying to get an account, how long is it taking? Try get a credit card on the Isle of Man. It's not very good for Isle of Man PLC, says 184. I understand I'm not promoting them in any way, but apparently HSBC are quite good for getting a credit card. What's this, the obsession with modern buildings? You don't see London, Bath, Chester or Shrewsbury demolish their historic buildings. Well, not all of them. Some go by the wayside. Thanks, 068. However, what will you put there? If it's worth saving, what is going to be where nuisance is? Is it going to be the original configuration? Is it going to be a museum? What exactly is it going to be? And put yourself, do this 180-degree thinking. Put yourself in our German visitors' shoes and our English, American, Canadian, Australian, New Zealand visitors. Scottish, Welsh, Irish. The people who have been coming here for 20 years and see what a mess we have around certainly the South Quay, apart from the businesses that are there, but we got holes in the landscape, big holes that you can see. What are they going to think? What would you say to them when they say, look mate, that's been like that for 15 years, what's happening? Heritage is all well and good in a museum, says Des, and looking at the large properties for sale and businesses going under, 15,000 will be leaving the Isle of Man, not arriving, says John. this story about the T-junction. Iconic building. It's not been there that long, really, has it? Has it been there 10 years or so? Businesses are having problems. Certainly hospitality is having problems. The T-junction announced its closure. So let's hear from the joint owner, Mark Davis. This is Mark Davis on why the T-junction is making its last cup of tea next year.
I think the hospitality sector at the moment is in crisis. The cost of everything is rising. The cost of wages as well, I didn't mention that, but obviously the minimum wage has been increased in the last 2 years, which I totally agree with. But for small businesses like mine, we do struggle to make ends meet, and you can only put your prices up so much. We've increased our prices by 20% in the last year to try and stem the bleed, basically, but it's not enough. It's just not enough. It hasn't done enough for us. I don't think the government sat there content to see businesses come and go. However, they are trying to increase the number of tourists that come to the island, I believe, by 100,000 a year. It's very difficult to see how you can increase tourist numbers and keep those tourists happy while the hospitality sector is in crisis.
Yesterday we heard from the Department for Enterprise, who says it acknowledges the very challenging times and pledged to support hospitality. Have you approached any politician or any department for help?
No, I haven't approached anybody for help. I am not blaming government for anything that's happened around the world. There are lots of factors and influences that are completely outside of our control. I'm not saying government couldn't have done more to help us, but it's not their fault.
I mean, you've spoken about the pressures facing the hospitality industry as a whole, and you say it's in crisis. What's your message to other hospitality industries who are in a similar position? They don't know whether they should close up or whether they should just keep plodding along.
A lot of businesses don't run quite so staff heavy as our own. The way they're set up, the profits are in a different profit margin, but I know for a fact that margins in catering are extremely small. You have to make you have to make a lot of cups of tea and sell a lot of sandwiches to cover £150,000 worth of staff wages, which is what our business was last year. In fact, our business lost £8,000 in the last financial year, so it would be a bit crazy to keep operating under those circumstances for reasons of pure sentimentality.
Well, it's a shame, isn't it? I don't know whether you've been, or at any point in the past few years, you've been in the T-junction, a very iconic place, great standards, great cup of tea, nice cup of coffee as well, and some lovely sandwiches in there and soup, but they're going, losing money. And it's as simple as that. Of course, they're in private enterprise. And in private enterprise, if you don't make money, you go out of business. It's as simple as that. How could we get the chief planning officer to answer questions, says David? They probably say they're following the rules. And the rules are there, but wow. Juan's right. Fight the digital ID or they'll get control of us. It'll be worse than the Chinese Communist Party, says Manx Bob. I think the government is taking our freedoms. Well, not this afternoon, they're not. On the key, says 382, just because somebody has money doesn't mean they want. Architects are probably wasting time and money with unacceptable projects. Says also, keep it brief on local matters. Thank you. I don't know what your name is, but you are 382. Thank you, 382. Good to hear from you. Give us a call just to confirm. Tynwald's broken for lunch, by the way, so if you want to take a break from Tynwald, you're probably having a cup of tea right now. Regarding cybercrime, the FSA this morning had technical issues regarding receiving and sending emails, says 667. This is the FSA. Has that been hacked? Well, you never know, do you? They never say. In the 1990s, the Isle of Man government were approached by HSBC to move their whole international headquarters to Douglas. Would have created 5,000 jobs, says Roy B, and they're good-paying jobs too. But for some unknown reason, the government declined the offer. We need business people to operate the Isle of Man as a business. It's a business. It is a business. It has money in and money out. We don't see any accountability for incompetency, just terrible realisation that these people have squandered our public money, our reserves, on projects that they're obviously incapable of understanding and executing. I suggest we apply for direct rule from the UK. Alternatively, we could join the EU and leave the pound for better governance. God help us. With all the shopkeepers and estate agents running the Isle of Man, because they're popular and not professional, says Roy B. Well, I mentioned that quote a couple of days ago from the late, great Clifford Irving, MHK, who said that when he was there, and it was Exco then, not the ministerial system, Exco ran the Isle of Man as a business and didn't play with the economy for political reasons. Now, you got any thoughts?
Hello. I'd like to rent a car for 3 days. Just something reasonable.
No problem at all. We've just got a few rules to make you aware of. You can't go off-island, you can't smile in the car, you can't take any friends, it's £10,000 a day. Oh, and you'll need £1 million deposit up front. Any questions?
Renting a car doesn't need to be so difficult or expensive. With prices from just £50 per day, speak to Rex Rental Company or book online at rexrental.im.
Rex Rentals. I'm so glad to hear that.
Just Care Products for mobility solutions.
At Just Care Products, we have a range of rise, recline and fireside chairs to try. These are British made and perfect for people with mobility issues. With finance available through our partner, Conister, come take a seat at Just Care Products. Find us behind B&Q or for more information, give us a call on
627-177.
Quality, economy, that's what we're all about.
Imagine relaxing in your new luxury bathroom with the latest bathroom suite. Or how about a stunning wet room with contemporary designer tiles? Turn your dreams into reality at a price you can afford at Paysetter. Visit the Paysetter Bathroom and Tile Showroom, Harris Terrace.
That's what we're all about.
Road racing is back on the island, and Manx Radio 1368 will be an essential part of it, bringing live practice and race commentary, news, travel and more to the island and the world on AM, online and digital. With airtime, sponsorship and digital advertising options available now, it's your chance to reach a global motorsports audience. So contact our sales team on 682620 or on sales@manxradio.com. Manx Radio 1368, the best biking station in the world.
Manx Radio Breakfast.
And we're here every weekday with the morning's main stories.
When you do get ferry cancellations because of poor weather, that does cause some real challenges.
It's lovely to see everybody at the finish, and we popped a bottle of champagne to celebrate, and the sun is shining around you.
The latest weather and travel news.
And given the amount of rainfall that we've had, certainly for the first part of April, it's likely to have caused fairly significant flooding in most locations.
Our daily quiz.
Sound bites.
And plenty of other topics.
Is that a roar? Or is it a growl?
Manx Radio Breakfast.
Back tomorrow from 7:30.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
11 minutes before one. And by the way, Sheena, I'm going to try and get to the 25 petrol stations in Douglas. I do promise. I've been saying I've been going to do it for ages. Beastie's on now. Hi, Beastie.
Hello, Andy. You just said bring back checks.
Well, I know they're still there, but everybody hates checks.
They haven't gone away. I haven't used a card for 24 years. I pay for everything with a check or cash. In fact, in a minute, I'm going to go down to the post office and pay my rates with a check.
What's the smallest amount you write a check for?
My electric bill, so that would be about £25 or something.
Right. And they're happy with it, are they? Where would you pay the post office for that?
Yeah. I pay for everything at the post office. Electric, rates, telephone, with a cheque at the post office.
How many cheque books do you get through a year?
A couple.
Really? Beastie,
no problem.
Beastie,
no problem.
You're a vanishing species, you know that, don't you?
Well, I am anyway, aren't I, Andy?
Well,
I mean, I haven't used a card since 2010. I ditched it because I didn't like what I saw, and that is surveillance and gathering data. These young ones that are paying for a pasty 50p with a card, they has nobody ever explained to them that somebody is gathering their data, what they're buying, where they were, how much they spend, and selling that data on them. Has nobody ever explained that to them?
Why aren't they
carrying cash? We've got to use cash. I plead to everyone out there, carry cash in your pocket.
I don't think they care, Beastie. I'm sure that they know. I'm sure they must know. And using some of the social media things like TikTok, which is owned by the Chinese government, they're harvesting everybody's information.
Harvesting, that's the good word. It's harvesting, isn't it? But do you really think they don't? I mean, do you really think they don't care?
Well, I think they're more bothered with a video of a cat. You know, if there's a nice video of a cat playing with a ball of wool, really where it comes from, and if somebody's harvesting all your data and your information, I don't know whether people actually worry about. Well, you obviously do.
Well, I was into computers in the early 80s, but I pulled the plug in 2007 because I did not like what I saw. I've got no technology here whatsoever now because I could see the social media coming in and I did not like it. And I pulled the plug after all those years being in computers. So, it makes me laugh now. A lot of people say, come and go to a computer. I'll come and help you learn how to use one.
So really, as we stand at the moment, Beastie, the Chinese government don't even know you exist.
But I got a bank account, haven't I?
Well, that's a yes, I suppose so, yes.
I mean, what do they do with my data? They say they don't share it, but I do have a bank account.
All right. Thanks for calling today, Beastie. Appreciate it.
Okay. Everybody, carry cash. Carry cash.
Thank you. Belt's WhatsApper 108 says, what a woman, Beastie. Thank you for your comments. I care. I carry cash, and I'm proud to have your comments on Man in Line. Good to hear from you. The T-Junction's upcoming closure. How much is going to be lost in VAT, NI, and income tax no longer being paid to the taxman? That is just one business lost. And obviously, in the world of free enterprise, they pay tax, have to pay tax, otherwise you go out of business. So, as Lisa says, the VAT, the NI, the income tax, how many staff will now be dependent on the government to help them survive? Well, resourceful people, so I'm sure they won't be out of work. It's just a shame, really. Any business is like the tip of an iceberg. There's a lot that goes on underneath it. Quick question about nuisance, says Treble O. Hello, Treble O. Did the government not tell the building firm to resubmit the planning after it was rejected the first time? It's gone backwards, to and fro. It's like war and peace. Just starting out. Oh, thank you for the message about some fish tanks. I'll get to that anyway, but Bonzo's on. Hi, Bonzo.
Hi, Bon. Big up to Beastie there, yes. Although I'm not a technophobe of any shape or form. I remember years and years ago warning about the Internet of Things. So the Chinese may know about her, but that will be through her kettle.
Oh, I see. Right.
That's not simply joking about it. Interconnection of various appliances and the smart home and stuff, what they call the Internet of Things. Yeah, that's great. Until somebody else decides to interfere with it and start a fire in your home with a kettle.
So, I mean, and a serious question, Beastie was saying, you know, a lot of people, don't they care that people are harvesting their data? I don't think the vast majority of people give a tuppenny toss about the fact that people are harvesting data, Bonzo.
Well, I think those that know mostly don't give a tuppenny toss. And those that don't know, well, don't care to know.
Yeah.
You know, they're just busy watching cat videos. Now, I'm not against cat videos, but I'm a great fan of cat videos. But when it then harvests or indeed allows people to scrape data from your use of it, then, yeah, a bit dodgy. But what I was going to talk about briefly was issues with hospitality and retail.
Yeah.
I mean, they're facing a double hit. because we're coming to a point, I think, now in the rent review cycles for commercial premises, whereby the rent will be reviewed and the property value will, of course, have gone up, calculated, and then they're slapped with a big rent increase. Now, they either take the rent increase or they ask for arbitration in the in the rental agreement. However, the person who asks for arbitration in the rental agreement is the one who pays for the arbitration. And such arbitrations are mostly not settled in a way that the person who wants the arbitration would like. So they're then faced with a huge cost. And then you have the cost of minimum wage. When I was discussing with other people about, and some people who are now in Timor, about actually putting minimum wage up to the living wage, I suggested that there needed to be a subsidy to business that would taper over a few years in order to do that. What we have now is minimum wage going without any support to business for that. Okay. And, well, I think we're starting to see the consequences.
Appreciate that. Thanks, Bonzo.
Okay, thank you.
Good to hear from you. Sue says business account over a year and still waiting for it. A real headache and I'm lost for words. I'm Manx, over 25 years with the same bank. I've always been in credit, waiting for a business account for over a year. I'm really sorry, Sheena. We'll do the 25 petrol stations in Douglas tomorrow. Thanks to Howie Kane on the phone today. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday.
WINT.